Okay, if you excuse my voice, I won't be able to scream like I like to usually. But we're on the 15th chapter, Perek Tes Vav, which is page 92. Page 92. As you can see on page 92, it says on the side that this is actually the Haftorah for Parsha Zohar. The Shabbos immediately preceding, thank you. The Shabbos immediately preceding Purim. This is the Haftorah that's read. We're going to see that the significance of this is just like Haman was from Amalek. This is the chapter dedicated to wiping out Amalek. And this is going to be one of the biggest mistakes that King Saul made, and that he was not successful in killing everyone out because he showed compassion. Perhaps he shouldn't have. Can everyone hear me or not really? Okay. Alright. Pasuk Aleph. V'yomer Shmuel el Shaul. So Shmuel says, Osi Shalach Hashem Lim Shachacha Lamelech. I'm the one that was sent by God to anoint you as the king, Al Amo, Al Yisrael, upon the nation, upon Israel. V'yaton now Shema B'kol L'kol Divrei Hashem. Now I want you to listen to exactly what God tells you to do. So we look at Rashi over here. Rashi says, V'yaton Shema L'kol Divrei Hashem. Pam Achas Nischalta. That one time you made a mistake. You made a mistake specifically a few chapters before, where you were instructed to wait. You're supposed to wait for me, even though you saw the Philistine army was coming and getting stronger, and you decided not to wait for me. And that was your first mistake. However, Atah now, Hisar Batzvacha, try to be extremely careful. Do exactly as I say. So, the message that Shaul's giving, that Shaul's receiving rather, is that because Shmuel saw that he's made mistakes in the past, it's very possible he'll make another mistake. And as Shmuel is a prophet, is a Navi, he perhaps was able to foresee that in fact he was going to make a second error. Now it's interesting that the Pasuk tells us that Shmuel was telling Shaul that I am the one that appointed you to be the king. It's very easy that a king could feel that he is in power, he's in control, he's the boss. In reality, Shmuel is the one that appointed him. So just like a boss sometimes has to ground his employees to let them know that I'm the one in charge here, that's exactly what Shmuel had to do as well to Shaul. If we jump to the Radak tells us, also in Pasuk Aleph, which is toward the top on the Radak, it's about the fourth line. It says, V'ata Shema, now listen. It says the Radak, Kalomen has to say, Kivan Shemashach to Lamelech, A Yisrael, since you've been appointed as the king, anointed as the king for the Jewish people, you need to do exactly what you're being told to do. And that specifically is fighting Amalek. Why is it necessary to fight Amalek? So we bring down the Talmud. The Radak quotes, that our rabbis of blessed memory state, that Shalosh Mitzvos, that there's actually three commandments that the Jewish people have when they entered into Israel, when the Jewish people, through the leadership of Yoshua, crossing the Jordan, there's three things they're obligated to do. Limnos Alam Melech. First, you have to appoint a king, which is what they did. They appointed their first king, Shaul. And then also, Lahachris Zar Shal Malik. It's necessary to remove any remnants of Amalek, to destroy them completely, and finally, live no space of Achira, to build the Beis HaMikdash, which implies that in order to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash, the prerequisite for that is twofold. You have to have a king, which they had, but also they have to destroy Molech. To discuss the reason why that's necessary. But nonetheless, that's why Shmuel is telling Shaul, Atah, now you must do this. Because if you want the Beis HaMikdash to be built, first the Molech has to be destroyed. Yes. Yes. A Molech, as the Torah is going to discuss, and really that's Pasuk, was a nation that after the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, after we left Egypt, having wiped out not only physically, but also economically, financially, the greatest powerhouse of the world, Egypt, we were unstoppable, and no one could touch us. However, as the Torah describes, there was a nation that attacked us from behind, the weak, while we were Ayef Yageya. At this weak state, they were able to attack the people that were laggers, lagging behind in the group. And it's brought down that a Molech did this just like a person who would see a scalding bath, that they would jump into this bath, even though they know they're going to get third-degree burns, need to be rushed to a hospital, but they did it for the next person. I'll accept the terrible wounds and the pain of getting burned in order that the next person will be able to have an easier time to go into that bath. Sounds pretty nice, but we're talking about killing innocent people. Killing the Jewish people, they knew that starting up with them would mean destruction for themselves, but they were willing to do whatever it took to give up their life in order that the future generations or future people would have an easier time to attack them. Which some people, just up to for discussion, compare a Molech to certain people in modern day history that also are willing to sacrifice their own lives, taking away innocent people's lives, just for the sake of adding terror into the world, making it a scarier place, more vulnerable environment. That's the nature of what a Molech was. So we're going to see, as it's discussed, which is the whole idea of getting rid of a Molech, Timcha Zecher Molech, it's not just to get rid of them, but the whole memory of them should be destroyed. We have to remember Zachar, it's the name of the Parsha, you have to remember them. Because if you don't remember them, you just let them be, then they'll continue, and their poison will be spread throughout the world. Sometimes, unfortunately, if a person has a disease which could be spreading, let's say it starts in their leg, sometimes you have to amputate the leg, even though we don't want to do that. But unfortunately, by doing that, what will end up happening is, looking at the long run, it's best for the human, the whole body, by getting rid of the poison. And that's what a Molech represented. That was their nature. And therefore, in order to be able to have the Beis HaMikdash, it was necessary to get rid of this people. And it's brought down in the Sefer Mishpasot Sahav. It says, V'tam HaDavar, the reason for this, Ki Kedei Livnos Mokom, in order to build a place, L'Hashiros HaShchinah, where Hashem's Divine Presence rests, Sarech L'Hachlish L'Achnia Es Tachas Ara. It's necessary to get rid of the bad first. As the Pasuk says, it's not brought down here, Sur Meira Vase Tov, which means remove one's self from bad and then do good. And it's no coincidence that's the order. In order for a person to do the right thing, you have to first rid yourself of the negativity. Sur Meira, and then Vase Tov, then you can do good. So too when it came to a Molech. In order to be able to have spirituality in this world, you had to remove the negative influences which surround it. And therefore, that was the significance of getting rid of a Molech. It's brought down also in a Medrash. Esther Rabbah talks about the story of Purim, that Haman asked Mordechai, the famous story, he asked him, why is everyone else bowing down? And you're not bowing down. Why don't you bow down to me? So obviously Mordechai refuses. I'm not doing it. He said, I don't understand. If you look at your own Torah in the book of Genesis, we find your descendant, Yaakov Avinu. And what did Yaakov do? When he saw his brother coming, he bowed down to this brother, Esav. We're only being introduced to Yaakov and Esav, their birth in this parsha. But in future weeks, we're going to read that Yaakov bowed down to Esav. So he says, so why don't you do the same thing? Learn from Yaakov, you can bow down to me. So Mordechai said, you're right, he did bow down. But out of all the people that bowed down, there was one child that never bowed down. Binyamin. Binyamin did not bow down. He wasn't born yet. He wasn't born until after Rachel. Rachel had a difficult labor, and she passed away. Binyamin never bowed down to Esav. And he said that I, Mordechai, I'm Ishimini. I come from this tribe. I come from Binyamin. And therefore, I will never, just as my, never bow down to Esav, so too I will also not bow down to the likes of someone who represents Esav. And because of that, because Binyamin did not bow down to Esav, that he did not embrace negativity, he did not show any respect for it, because of this, the Beis HaMikdash, when it was built in his portion. Israel was divided, and what the portion where the tribe of Binyamin had is where the Beis HaMikdash stood. And says Chazal, that's no coincidence. The reason why it was built that way, it was done that way, is because the only way the Beis HaMikdash could stand is in an area where no one attaches themselves to the negativities of Rishayim, of wickedness. And therefore, going back to what the Radak says, that's the significance of why Shaul is being told that before the Beis HaMikdash can be built, it's necessary that you must get rid of a mulling. Once you get rid of the negativity, only afterwards can the Beis HaMikdash be rebuilt. And that's the first pasuk. Let's continue now with the second pasuk. Alright. Ko amar Hashem Tzavakos. So Hashem said, Pekati is asher asa amalik l'Yisrael. Pekati, as the Masuda Sion says, means zikaru. God remembers what Amalek did to the Jewish people. We discussed what they did. And the pasuk continues, Asher samlo baderech balosam Mitzrayim. When we were ascending up from Egypt, when we were going from Egypt to Israel, and we were doing well, we had God on our side, everyone was terrific, they attacked us when we were vulnerable. And that's what Amalek is. Stabbing someone in the back, someone who's innocent, someone who doesn't anticipate that they're going to be attacked. That's what Amalek does. They attack those people. Very similar to terrorism in our days. So that's the significance of what it means. Hashem Pekati, Hashem remembers. And we also, the Masudas David sounds very similar. He says, Zochar ani es asher asa Amalek Yisrael. I remember. God does not forget what happened to the Jewish people at that time. It's brought down, in fact, in the Yalkut. Pekanti also could come from the word pikadon. A pikadon is a deposit or safekeeping. That if I need to borrow $10,000, and you guys trust me, but you don't trust me that much, so I decided to give you my Rolex, which I don't own one. I don't even wear a watch. But pretending I did, I gave you my Rolex. So that's called a pikadon. You're holding it as a safekeeping until the loan is paid up. So every time you look at that Rolex, hopefully in a nice secure place in your house, maybe in a safe deposit box, you remember me. And you remember that I owe you something. So that watch, that pikadon, that safekeeping, is a not just a remembrance, but it's something which is a tally that everything that I own, which is in this one little Rolex, all my whole life savings, this is what you see. And therefore, says the Yalkut, that's the significance of Pekanti. That when Hashem looks at Amalek, just like this watch, which is for safekeeping, Hashem remembers and looks at all their actions. He keeps a tally of all the things that they did wrong, and now he's ready to accept the payment back for what they did to the Jewish people.
Rabbi, is the word pokad also used in Hashem remembers Sarah?
Yes. Which could mean zachar, to remember. Hashem pokad the Sarah, right? That's exactly right. Which in that context, it meant that she conceived to have a child for end up having Yitzchak. That's exactly the same word, right? Okay, Pasuk Gimel. It's great, my voice is coming back. I feel great. Pasuk Gimel. Ata now, leich v'kisa samali. I want you to go, and I want you to wipe out Amalek. Now, not only wipe out Amalek, this is not the same generation. These are not the same people. These are their children. But it's not just the soldiers that I want you to kill out. The Haramtem is Kalashiva. I want you to wipe out everything that they have. Vosachmolov. Do not have any compassion on them. Don't show any mercy. Meimata me'ish at Isha. I want you to wipe out and kill man, woman, Ma'olel v'yad Yonek. Mishor v'yad seh, migmol v'yad chamor. I want you to wipe out even the youngest, as well as all animals. After all, what did an animal do? But I want you to wipe out all animals, oxen, sheep, camels, donkeys, anything which is owned by Amalek, destroy. I want them all gone. That's what he told them to do. So we look at the Radak. The Radak tells us, by Pasuk Gimel, which is the first medium-sized line, Vosachmol. Why did he have to tell Shaul not to have mercy, not to show compassion? Well, Lafi, because, says the Radak, Shesofam Lachmol, because we know at the end he does show compassion. He doesn't do exactly as he's told. He doesn't wipe out everyone and everything. Because we're going to see later on in verse 9, it says that Shaul did have compassion. So because of this, his hero, that's why he was warned not to show compassion. Which means, first of all, that it was understood the nature of Shaul was to be compassionate. So he had to be warned. But also he knew that this was something which potentially could happen and did happen. But it's brought down that this is the significance of Musar, of learning things over and over. Even though you know what's proper behavior and what's inappropriate, but by repeating it and learning it over and over, it becomes more ingrained within yourself. And even though you can say, well, what's the point of me learning this? I already know these basic facts. Be kind, be nice. But by repeating it and learning it over and over, it becomes part of your essence. This is why a person learns Perkei Avos. How many times do you learn Perkei Avos? Ethics of our fathers. Ethics. We know ethics. We know how to be ethical. But by reading them over and over, it becomes ingrained. Yeah.
I wonder if there are commentaries that broaden discussion, because I can imagine that a human being's natural instinct would be for why these little innocent babies.
Right. We're going to see that in Pasuk Hey, in Tu Psukim. That question is going to be asked. All right, we're going to get to that. It's a very difficult question. Okay, very difficult question.
If you want to think about what's going on right now, and I always thought that I had tremendous compassion for the children and the families, and I would always say, they just want to live a life like we do.
Right. And you know who they emulate, who they want to be like.
So it's there was that picture of they had a birthday party for a terrorist kid, year old, dressed as a terrorist.
Right. So this gives you a better understanding of why Shmuel said that to Shaul.
I get guess nowadays, unfortunately, it's not as difficult of a question.
Now we can understand this much better.
I mean, like yesterday, what happened, you know, they went and they started to bomb out this house. Houses in, whatever, two Hamas terrorists. Yeah. And they've already learned the population. They went there en masse to protect them. And Israel would not.
That's what they're going to do all the time now that they saw it work. I'm sorry that I interrupted you.
No, it's important. Very good point. Very valid point. Very valid point. It's unfortunate again that we have such an easy answer to that question, but that's the reality of the children as well as the adults. The Ad Chamor, the Radak continues and says, "Ki'im yichyu mehem." What's the big deal? Animals? Let the animals live. What's an animal going to do, right? So he says, because if the animals live, Shor Chamor, let's say an ox, donkey, Yomru, people say, Zeh Hoy Mishol Amalek, this is among the leftovers, the remains of Amalek. Vahari Lo Nimcha Zeker Amalek. We have to completely erase, obliterate the memory of Amalek. Because of Omer Timcha Zeker Amalek, that's what it says. The remembrance of Amalek must be completely blotted out. So, interesting. It says the significance of killing the animals is because otherwise people will see the animals and remind themselves of their owners, and then perhaps by doing so, they'll remember that negative influence. So it's not just they themselves are negative influence, but the history is so destructive that if we have anything that perhaps someone will see something which remind them of those negative actions, that might inspire someone to emulate them. So by wiping them out completely, as though they never existed, that's a way that such philosophies cannot exist, because no one will know or remember that type of a person.
The English note here.
Yes. Pretty wild.
Yeah.
Also on page 93, I underlined the Ralbag. I like this. This is a very fascinating explanation. Is that, I'll just read what it says. The Ralbag comments that Amalek's property had to be destroyed so that no one would accuse the Jewish people of fighting Amalek only to loot its belongings. It had to be clear that the goal of this war was to carry out the divine command to rid the world of the nation, whose very essence was evil, hatred of Israel, and defiance of God. So by destroying their property shows we had no ulterior motives. We just want to get rid of them. Okay, continue with Pasuk Dal. Vayishama Sha'ol Es Ha'am. So that's what he was told to do. Destroy, wipe everyone out. So King Shaul went, and he summoned, he gathered together the nation, and he counted them by the means of using animals, specifically lambs, Mosaim Elef Ragli, and he ended up finding out how many people were in his army, specifically 200,000. Be'aseres Alafim Es Ish Yehuda, and with regard to the people who are connected to Yehuda, 10,000. So, what's the significance of lambs? Why didn't he just count them himself? So, it's brought down in Rashi. Rashi says, Omar l'chol echad v'echad. He said to each one, Sheikach t'leh matzana shel melech. They should go and take a lamb, which was really his, because he was a wealthy man. And he said, take one of my lambs. So he gave every one of the soldiers a lamb from his own. And afterwards he counted the lambs. It's forbidden to count the Jewish people. Shinemar, as it says by them, They're so great in abundance that they cannot be accounted by, because there's so many. Now, of course, we are finite, but the significance is that every Jew, every person, has infinite levels of growth. So to count and say you're three, you're limiting that person. So you're not allowed to limit a person. So therefore, we can't count a Jew. You can't count a Jewish person. What? Well, you can tell people how many kids you have.
They don't.
Well, that's...
They have a lot.
They lose count. I don't know. But,
oh, they don't want to have an eye horror.
But it's not based on this.
No, okay.
You wouldn't be allowed to say, count all your kids by number, but just say of eight kids. Right, right. Same idea. It would be too difficult for everyone to bring a lamb to Shul, you know. Wouldn't look good. Yes.
That showed that he was very wealthy when he gave them each a lamb. It says before when he counted them, he gave them part of each eye.
Right.
It says that when you become in politics, you become wealthy. And that's certainly true.
Yes. And politicians, they make like, what, $10,000 a year, and they spend millions of dollars of campaigning to get that job.
And they get from all kinds of sources.
Apparently so. Right. So that's what Rashi says. When we look at the Radak, I underlined the word Taloyim. He jumped down a couple of lines. Why a lamb? Okay, he was rich, so gave everyone a $100 bill. Why a lamb? What's the significance of that? So the Radak tells us what time of year was this? What holiday was coming up? Alidei HaPesach. The lamb was corresponded to the Karban Pesach. Yodim and Yodim. This way, he was able to figure out the number. Ki Pesach lo ha'ya karav b'mehem esachim. Because generally, when it comes to bringing a sacrifice, you don't bring your own. V'dibur rabosai zechon levracha. Our sages tell us, Shimono san betloyim lo min apsachim. Perhaps like Rashi, he counted lambs not because it was Passover. Elo she'amar lehem. He said to them, Shiichu kol anshe achayil t'loyim mishlo. I want to give you my own. V'yikach kol echa t'lecha. He gave everyone a lamb. V'yachakach tziva limnos at'loyim. Afterwards he counted them. And he quotes, continues, by again saying the significance of this is that you're not allowed to count a person, but rather objects that they possess. Similar to in the Beis HaMikdash, they did not use pottery or lambs, they used the chatzi shekel. The half shekel was another way of a census.
Did they sacrifice these lambs? Did they give them back to him? Or people kept them or what?
Well, it doesn't say. But according to the first opinion, they should have, if it was a Karban Pesach. But it doesn't discuss what they did with these lambs. He only did this to be able to figure out how many people were in his army.
Maybe he gave it to them.
Right. Right. I was just saying that the psukim, the subsequent upcoming psukim, do not mention what happens to this lamb. So that's up to the interpretation, therefore, exactly what it was, the purpose of it. Okay. Pasuk, moving on to Pasuk Hey. Pasuk Hey tells us, V'yavol Sha'ol, that Sha'ol went on Ir Amalek, he went to the city of Amalek, V'yoreh b'nachal, and he fought in the Nachal, in the valley. Now if you look in the Mesudas Sion, that's how he interprets the word V'yoreh. Melosh and Mariva u'milchama, regarding to quarreling and fighting. The question is, why does it say that he fought them? It should say that they fought them. He wasn't the only one. We just mentioned he had thousands of people in his army. So now all of a sudden, he is the only one that fights. Who does he think he is? He thinks he's his son, Yonasan. He can fight by himself. So Rashi tells us an incredible statement. This is a very powerful Rashi. which is still on page 92. Rashi says, which is the last Rashi on the page, Yare Banachal. He wasn't fighting against the Malik. Rather, according to the second answer, the first explanation is indeed Yalachim Banachal. That's where he was fighting, in the valley. Rabbi Seinu Amru, but our sages tell us, Al Iski Nachal. He was fighting regarding some type of other parsha, some other lesson in the Torah about a valley. And his fighting was not among a Malek, it was an inner struggle. He was having difficulty with this commandment of wiping out all the Malek. Why? Nachal Rav V'Danas Atzma. Based on this valley, he judged himself. And he asked himself the following question. Umar b'shvil nefesh achas, with regard to one soul, Amra Torah, the Torah says, Aruf Egla v'nachal, there's an obligation of Egla Arufa, which means if a person finds a dead body in between two cities, homicide, someone murdered him, we don't know who the murderer is, the elders of those cities, the Zikdeir, have to measure which city is closest to this body, to the remains. The city which is closest to the remains is obligated to take an animal, an egla, right, a calf, and a rufa, which means to chop it, to kill it by the neck. And this is done by a nachal, by a valley, a very rocky area. We take this animal, which never did work, and you put it by this valley, which is a rocky area, Nachal Eitan, that's what it's called, which also cannot be planted on, no work can be done. And the reason why we use things which have never been worked is to show the loss of the human life. That this person who died had tremendous potential. He didn't utilize his potential. Just like this animal, we're taking it away, its life, at a young age, even though it did not reach its potential. Animals are beasts of burden. It didn't do any work. So it was a waste of a life. This human being that died, so remember that we kill it on a field that is a wasteland, a land which is not used. So Shaul thought about this. V'yare b'nachal. He was thinking about this mitzvah of Egla Rufa, when it just by taking one life, we're so sensitive to human life that by doing so, we'll do this whole ceremony to remind people, to make sure that people should be more careful. He should have been escorted. He shouldn't have been alone in a dangerous place in the middle of the wilderness. Continuing Rashi, Bishvil kol nafashos ha'elu. For all of these souls, Volkoshekeh, certainly, all the more so. How could it be that when it comes to one person, we do this huge ceremony because of the preservation of life is so important in Jewish philosophy, and now I'm being told to wipe out thousands of people? People that didn't really do anything, nice people, right? And then he asks, Im Adamcha, if you want to tell me that the people are sinful, Behema Machat, what do the animals do wrong? Why should I kill the animals? So Shaul was struggling. He was struggling with this mitzvah of wiping out a Malek. And that's what it means in the Pasuk, V'yare b'nachal, that he was fighting among himself, an inner quarrel, inner struggle, Banachal, about this mitzvah, the mitzvah of Egla Rufa. And this is what bothered him. How could God ask me to do such a thing? And that's how Rashi ends. However, if we continue in the Radak, just the last line, the Radak answers his question. Actually, God answers his question. The Radak tells us, Yatsa Baskol, that a heavenly voice came out, V'amrlo, and said, she said the following, this heavenly voice. Sho'o, al tihi tzadik harbe yotzer miborecha. Do not be a greater tzadik. Don't act more kind, more compassionate, more righteous than your Creator. In other words, sometimes you don't understand things, but if God is commanding you to do it, it's because He understands something more than you understand. God realizes that there's something destructive about a Amalek, and therefore they have to be destroyed. Not only them, but even their animals. Their animals must be destroyed as well. And therefore, just because you don't understand something, don't show compassion. Because you should not show more compassion than God Himself, God who shows compassion. Because we don't understand why God tells us to do things. But God has a bigger picture. God has a better understanding. And therefore you have to do what He tells you to do, regardless of if you think it makes sense to you or not. That's it. Okay. All right. We're going to stop here. Stop a little early.